When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
The following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Just when I had my optimism back, K-State was within a point. And then six turnovers on the next seven possessions.
Good Lord.
Man, it really unraveled in the second half, didn't it? The big question is that curtains on K-State's chance to get to the NCAA tournament? Joe Lenardi now has K-State, the men, of course, as now one of four teams in the next four out. And entering that Iowa State game, they were in the first four out. Also doesn't help. There's a lot of bubble teams playing.
A lot of bubble teams playing and weird outcomes such as Mississippi State smoking Tennessee today.
We'll touch on that. Plus, of course, the loss last night. We'll talk about K-State and their performance in the quarterfinals against Iowa State in last night's loss, 76-57. The final score. We'll blindly rank five with David G at 440. Plus, coming up at 5:10, really looking forward to this conversation with ESPN women's basketball bracketologist Charlie Cream is going to call in, and we're going to talk K-State women's basketball. They're on a different bubble than the men. The K-State men are on the one and only bubble in men's college basketball, and that is to get into the NCAA tournament. And right now, the men are on the wrong side. The bubble that the K-State women are on is that will they host a first and second round of their NCAA tournament? The K-State women are in, and at worst will be a five seed. But a difference between a four and a five is that a four gets to host two rounds. A five will be traveling throughout their entire run of the NCAA tournament. A lot of people have K-State a four, but a Charlie Cream out of ESPN has K-State as a five. So we'll ask him to explain why K-State, according to his opinion, is a five seed and not a four. And by the way, the K-State women will have selection Sunday, 7 o'clock on ESPN. But right here on K-Man on Sunday, with coverage beginning at what time, Troy? 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock here on K-Man. It'll be coverage of selection Sunday for the men's NCAA tournament. And with that in mind, we have now officially launched the Booth Creek Wagyu 2024 Bracket Challenge.
Bum, bum, bum.
So you can go to any of our station's websites, newsradiokman.com, 1015krot.com, wherever you want to go, just find the banner. 2024 Bracket Challenge presented by Booth Creek Wagyu, and get signed up. Because we got a lot of prizes up for grabs, including first place, win $750 in cash. Second place is going to win a 65-inch 4K TV.
Ooh. Crap, I'm employed. I can't do it.
Yeah. There are a lot of prizes, a lot of cash up for grabs. So if you're doing a office pool, great. Does your office pool have $750 going to the grand prize winner? I'm going to guess not. So go get signed up. Go get pre-registered. And of course, the Bracket Challenge does officially launch, gets underway as soon as those brackets are announced during Selection Sunday that you'll hear right here on K-Man with coverage beginning at 5 o'clock. I thought we may get some deja vu from K-State last night. K-State was down to Iowa State 34-27 halftime. And I'm telling people, guys, we got Iowa State right where we want them. We're in Kansas City. This is Iowa State's Super Bowl. I was told there are a lot more Iowa State fans than K-State fans.
Yeah,
I can't confirm that, but I was just told.
I mean, you get the opportunity to escape Ames, you're going to do it.
What's the old joke? Well, we got jobs. It's a little harder to get away when you got jobs.
There you go.
I'm sure the crowd tonight in Kansas City will be darn near all Iowa State. With them being in the semifinals?
Oh, yeah. I don't know that Baylor's going to have much of a crowd for it.
No, I don't think Baylor is. Houston, I don't know. I don't know what kind of crowd they had yesterday. I don't know if that TCU-Houston game had much of a crowd there. But Iowa State's going to bring a crowd.
Well, and let's be honest, the TCU-Houston game was all over 10 minutes in, so...
Well, yeah, it took 10 minutes for TCU to score.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Folks bailed on that game.
Well, K-State had a couple of droughts that probably added up to 10 minutes where K-State just, it was almost like in Ames, the first game where K-State's down and they're not looking good at halftime. K-State in this game looked a little bit better at halftime, although they did struggle. And then they come back nearly, but they just couldn't take the lead.
Right.
They just couldn't get over the hump, and that's what K-State ran into yesterday with the loss to Iowa State. And, of course, I mean, a number of things added up to K-State just falling behind. To put it simple, once again, K-State missed shots, and they turned it over way too much. And my first key that I mentioned in Mitch Palm, I believe it was the first one, was keep the turnovers at least even. Now, K-State did a phenomenal job of scoring off turnover, 6 days ago against Iowa State. Senior day in Manhattan. That was huge for K-State to have that advantage, which I believe was 20-11. But last night, points off turnover was Iowa State 23 and K-State 9. Now, for K-State to score 9 points off 6 turnovers is pretty good. But they only forced 6 turnovers. Iowa State, with their second-best defense in the nation, only second to Houston, forced K-State into 20. Kaluma had 4. Tyler Perry had 4. Dede Ames with 3. Cam Carter with 3. David Gasson with 3. And speaking of David, with keeping K-State just uncomfortable, off balance, didn't allow K-State to do what they wanted to do, like in the previous meeting, where now this time Iowa State just dominated in the paint. Absolutely crushed K-State in the paint, 44-24. David Gasson did not have a big day whatsoever. He was not in the equation, and I think that hurt K-State. Wasn't even really rebounding a ton. 25 minutes, no points, 4 rebounds, 3 turnovers, no blocked shots. No offense to Will McNair. But when Will McNair is K-State's second best option to score, it's not probably going well. And Arthur Kaluma did have 13. TP had 18. But Cam Carter he didn't have himself the best night. He was 2 of 10 from the floor. Iowa State just controlled it. And that really hurts because K-State finally, it felt like, okay, with if you're looking at bracketology, if you really take that like gospel, and K-State with that win, the previous win the night before, they're now in the driver's seat to if they can get a win over Iowa State with the resume they already have built, and we're going to hear from Jerome Tang. I'm going to let him make the case. He's the salesman. He did a pretty good job, and I'm going to play the whole thing in the next segment. But if you could have got that win over Iowa State, listen, where we all counted K-State out, where we're thinking, boy, this is just, it's not going to happen. You're thinking NIT. We were thinking NIT a couple of weeks ago. Actually, NIT probably entered the equation when K-State became a 500 team in the Big 12 because they were now not winning games after a good start, after a 4-1 start. You get to 500, things are not looking good, and you're thinking, man, this may be an NIT team.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tyler Perry once again going to have to play in the NIT. That loss does spoil it a little bit. Now, is you know, and we'll get to more of this in a little bit, but is K-State's chances absolutely done? No, it's not. But it's just not looking like – it's not looking likely because there's so many bubble teams still playing. And again, we're going to get to that more here in just a moment. But K-State's chances to control their own destiny in a way – and maybe that's a strong phrase to use. Maybe that's not necessarily true. It wasn't like a Big 12 championship and, you know, like in football and you know, you win and you're good. just
right.
Win games. Maybe it's not that simple. But it would have given K-State – a much better opportunity to get into the field with a sixth quad one win, another win over a top 25 team, another top 25 net ranked team. That would have been a beautiful, not only just a beautiful win, it would have been their ninth quality win of the year. If you look at the power index in their resume, when it comes to games that K-State's played this year that would have been considered a quality win, I think K-State's played the most of anybody this year of quality wins, and that's thanks to a good work of building a non-conference and, of course, playing in a strong conference. And that would have been, according to ESPN's Power Index, K-State's ninth quality win of the year. And also a resume that, you know, you do unfortunately have one bad loss on there. That's Miami. And nobody thought that would be a bad loss when that game took place. But that would have helped. It would have been a big help. And K-State unfortunately falls short.
It's amazing how when you go back and look at a schedule, how expectations wind up being so different at the end of the year. When we looked at what K-State could possibly do during the course of the year, the excitement, and then you open with a USC team that's ranked in the top 25, a Miami team that's in the top 25. Ooh, Providence is coming off of a great year last year. And they all are in that spot right there with K-State, except for Miami. I mean, they're not even a bubble team in the discussion. It's crazy how when you try to put together a great schedule and there's so many variables to it that wind up impacting you negatively at the end of it.
ESPN women's basketball bracketologist Charlie Cream joins us at 5:10. We're at 5:30 for K-State baseball network coverage tonight as the Bat-Cats open up at Toyton Family Stadium, a three-game series against Missouri State with first pitch at 6:05 and pregame coverage again is at 5:30. We still have Blindly Ranked 5 coming up at about 4:40. Let's go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll play the clip of Jerome Tang after last night's loss making the case for K-State. And I thought did a great sales job, a convincing speech for 3 minutes on why K-State should be in, but there's still one number, there's still one metric that stands out, and it's really ugly for K-State's resume. So all that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Plus a look at the bubble coming up next. We continue with the game. Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, and now Owen Burke will be stepping into the studio. He was doing some work over in K-Rock before he joined us. He'll now step into the captain's chair. Phone number 785-537-1350. Charlie Cream, ESPN's women's basketball bracketologist, will be calling in at 5:10. We'll discuss K-State's chances of be a 4 seed and host the first and second round of the NCAA tournament. Right now he has them as a 5. Not going to push back too much. Don't really have time to go back and forth on that topic, but I do, and I'm pretty passionate about I do not think Colorado or Gonzaga should host the first and second rounds of the NCAA tournament over K-State. I do not see the resume, especially with Gonzaga. Especially with, their best win against Stanford. I get that. That was on their home floor, first of all, Gonzaga's home floor, mm-hmm. in Spokane. Stanford did not, I don't know the circumstance, I don't know what happened, but Cameron Brink, who is a solid forward, she is Instagram famous. She's one of the, when it comes to NIL, one of the biggest earners in women's college basketball, and a hell of a forward. I don't think she played in that game. And then their next best win is Alabama. K-State has five other wins better than Alabama.
Not only that, but if Gonzaga would host, they don't even host on campus. They've got to go to the Spokane Arena.
Correct. Yeah.
To host. So they don't even officially get their own spot. They're having to play in an arena that happens to be about 20 blocks from campus.
Let's jump back to the men. Their situation is, of course, a lot more dramatic. And that is now for what's been like 3 or 4 weeks. K-State is still on the wrong side of the bubble heading into Selection Sunday, most likely. Before I get to the bubble, my thoughts, I'm going to hand things over to Jerome Tang for 3 minutes. Because he was asked the question, I don't really remember the exact question, but, is K-State good enough to get into the NCAA tournament? Do you think K-State will get in? All that. So Coach Tang, now a salesman. Who, by the way, left Kansas City now. He's already back out recruiting. Did not take Longdia back out there.
No.
Here's Jerome Tang making the case for K-State to be an NCAA tournament team.
I thought last night when we won that game against Kansas, and I have several reasons why, we have five quad one wins, all five of our quad one wins against the top 30 in the net. We have six wins against the top 40 in the net. The opponents that we played against in the non-conference and conference combined have the ninth best defense in the country and the 35th best offense in the country. So we didn't play a powder puff schedule. We have the number one strength of schedule of all the bubble teams right now. We have the number one strength of schedule of all of them. We're 1-0 against the SEC, and that was a true road game at LSU. We're 2-0 against the Big East, and we played Providence on a neutral court with Bryce Hopkins. Right, their best team, and beat them, right? And so we played six power conference teams in the non-conference and an American team. So we didn't duck anybody in what we did. We won seven overtime games, and for some reason, that's being held against us in the net with the metrics, right? Because I was told a long time ago, just win the game, right? And because we didn't win by 30 or 40 against quad four teams, right, that's being held against us in the numbers, right, and what the net shows. What's not taken into account is that we were missing two guys who could have started for us, and we were trying to figure out who we were in November when those things happened. Only three of our losses are to non-NCAA tournament teams, and so that's another reason why I feel like we have nine wins in the number one league in the country. And so I'd said all along, nine wins in this league should get you in. And so last night when we won, I felt really good about that. Now, obviously, I'm not the one making the decision. But we have the most quad one wins and the best quad one winning percentage of any bubble team except for Texas A&M. And they have four quad four losses, right? So we have no quad four losses. We have one quad three loss. And that was to Miami. And when we played Miami on a neutral site, they were ranked 15th in the country. They weren't the team that Miami is right now. Okay. And when we played USC on a neutral site, they were also top 20 in the country. We played the USC team that just beat Arizona the other day. That's the USC team that we played, not the one that had injury problems and lost a bunch of games during the year. So, when I look at it and I see our body of work, and I think about our quad one wins. We have elite quad one wins. Three teams are ranked in the top 10 in the country when we beat them. We beat Kansas full strength. We beat them with Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickerson, right? And we beat Baylor, and we beat Iowa State. And so we have elite quad one wins. We have no bad losses. And so I felt last night when we won that game, that gave us our ninth Big 12 win, that we were in the tournament.
Okay, so technically, going by the quad you know, three and quad four. Miami by one rank, which is 101. If they were ranked 100th in the net, it would be a quad two loss. But since they are 101, it has become a quad three loss. So I do agree. I don't think K-State has any bad losses. They've played 19 total, what was been considered quality games. And K-State together has won 9 quad one and quad two games, and they've lost 13. So they've played a lot of quad one, quad two games. They won all their quad four. They have the one quad three loss, but again, that's by one ranking. That was a hell of a speech by Coach, to say the least. Who were we talking to in the office earlier? That was a hell of a sales job, and I was convinced.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm convinced, too. Like, it's hard to argue against that. Now, you could start to break down the losses, and Coach did a little bit, and they said, yes, the net is taken into consideration, the close losses to some teams in overtime. You know, there were two, let's see here, one of their overtime wins was against a quad four team. Another one to a quad three. So anyway, I could go on and on about that, but the real rough number, and again, that's a hell of an argument.
Yep.
But the net is heavily considered in selecting these teams. And right now, K-State's net ranking is 70, and I say that after, recent history. I mean, the lowest net ranking team to get into the NCAA tournament was Indiana at 77.
And that's an at-large. Net ranking as an at-large. Yes, there are going to be automatic qualifiers. Montana State, I'm looking at you. Who get in with horrendous net rankings. And it's when you get outside of really that 45 to 50 range that you really start sweating that net ranking. And K-State's is way too high for that.
If you look at the bubble, what also I don't like, and again, I'm all for K-State being in. I definitely want K-State to be in the NCAA tournament.
Sure.
I mean, they've played in the toughest conference in – well, and that's another thing. Like, who was it? The ACC? Was it them that was arguing about the Big 12's model and scheduling?
Yes.
About
yes.
How they go about their scheduling that really beefs up their ranking and strength of schedule – or
their net.
In the net.
In the net. Mm-hmm. That they were gaming the system.
I mean, if you're a member of the committee, are you listening to that?
For crying out loud, you're the ACC. You're supposed to be, remember all of the talk for how many years that they're the conference of basketball. Tobacco Road is ruling. Okay, you're going to whine that much about what the net rankings are?
Well, what didn't help yesterday was that a lot of bubble teams won conference tournament games. And you entered, okay, so if we're just going off bracketology, you have 16 bubble teams when it goes to first four byes, last four in, first four out, next four out. You're talking about 16 teams. You had 11 still playing today. You had one in Mississippi State beat Tennessee, and that's the number 5 team in the country in convincing fashion, 73-56. You still have teams like, you know, Virginia, you know, even if they win today against NC State, that's not exactly the most convincing win, I would say. They really need more to beef up their resume. You know, Texas A&M's not playing, so that's interesting. You know, Colorado probably still needs a win, and they got Washington State, who's definitely into the tournament. New Mexico, if they win tonight, I think they get into the tournament. Pitt will play, number 4 Carolina. Providence, who's in the first four out, according to ESPN's Joe Lenardi. Providence, who K-State beat, plays number 10 Marquette. Let's see, who else is in action tonight? You know, Indiana State's not playing, and they kind of, you know, with their loss yesterday, do they now just kind of gravitate their way out of the field? They've been a very popular at-large pick for a mid-major to get into the tournament.
Basically because everybody wants to see Avila play. Or Avila, however you pronounce his name.
Oh, yeah, the dork. The guy that looks like a dork and has the glasses. Yeah,
what was it? I mean, the nicknames are just classic.
I've not watched any Indiana State. I've just seen the reels on social media about him. That's all I know about Indiana State.
You know, Big Bird.
Big Bird, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Ohio State also plays tonight against a top 25 Illinois team. So you're talking about, it's kind of funny. So the last four teams on the bracketology that are listed as the last four in, they're playing games that may not do a whole lot of work for them when it comes to beefing up their resume. Meanwhile, first four out type of teams like New Mexico, Pitt, and Providence have opportunities tonight to really play their way into the tournament. K-State is one of the next four out, are just sitting and waiting and are hoping a lot of teams lose tonight.
UAB right now, by the way, has started to gain an edge on Wichita State after that game has been close all afternoon down in the AAC.
Yeah, K-State, Coach Tang said it, that he wants them to feel like their back is against the wall. You know, mentality-wise, mm-hmm. going into the Big 12 tournament, it worked in their first game. Second game, did not had a really bad second half and just did not perform, turn it over a ton.
Well, but let's also be honest. Iowa State's defense,
second best in the nation.
Yeah, and the first best is Houston. I mean, you put the two together, and that's why those two teams played as well as they did throughout the course of this season in this conference.
Iowa State.
And they are hounding, and they get by with some things, but that physicality you have to be ready for, and teams normally aren't ready for it.
But I'm not typically the one that's like going to just give you all these numbers and break down resumes. Like, I mean, K-State had plenty of opportunities themselves to just take care of themselves. And I think when it's bubble or not, you first have to look at yourself and really analyze what happened, what we could have done better, and realize that, you know, think about all the close losses K-State had. A couple of those, one or two, go a different way, and we're probably talking about K-State being an 11 seed. And I know there's bracketology out there that would put K-State in as an 11 seed. I think there's argument that you could put K-State in over Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not forget Oklahoma with a big comeback beating K-State in Bramlage Coliseum earlier this year. TCU, who I don't feel like they should be. I mean, I think they should be more of a bubble team than they are. Because, I mean, Oklahoma and TCU just played each other, right, in the NCAA or the Big 12 tournament. Well, Oklahoma was missing a ton of guys.
Right.
I mean, they were not close to full strength. They were missing a lot of dudes, and TCU kind of got a fraudulent win, and now they're much safer because of that win. I'm like, if we're really taking into consideration injuries and when they were missing guys, you know, maybe that should be taken into consideration, that TCU beat a weak Oklahoma team, and TCU should be more of a bubble team than they actually are, but they're not, at least according to a lot of bracketology. So K-State's left in a position where they have just to wait and watch, but I can only give you my true feeling about this, and that is K-State will not get into the NCAA tournament, and that they are destined for the NIT if they elect to accept that bid. I feel bad for guys like Tyler Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Perry so badly wanted to play in an NCAA tournament, and I think when this season is all said and done, I'm going to look at Tyler Perry and remember him more for the good things than the bad. The bad being he did have those lulls of not hitting shots. But I saw him way more than anybody change their approach to the game and got better. And with that approach, got back to what he's good at and start hitting some threes. And he was hitting some threes in the Big 12 tournament. He was 3 of 6 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's remember as well, K-State never had Naquan Tomlin. Quez Glover, like Coach said, really didn't try to play, but
right.
Never played all year.
Right.
So you're down potentially two starters. So, yes, this sucks. This should have been a much better team. But going back to the back against the wall, I felt like that was all season.
I agree.
I felt this whole season has been K-State back against the wall, was never at their full potential, and was just playing, you know, at a disadvantage. Maybe disadvantage is not the right word to say. They were just never full strength. They were never the team they were meant to be. Tyler Perry had to take on a lot more than he was expecting to take on when he came to K-State to play basketball.
But again, as I noted in the opening segment, you know, that's a lot of teams. Your expectations going into the year always wind up playing out a little differently than, or a lot differently than what you thought. I mean, think about what we thought USC was going to be at the start of the year. You know, they went through that stretch where they had all kinds of injuries that hurt them. Now they're playing well to the point that they beat Arizona the other day. But are they going to be able to maintain that? Miami was nowhere near. I mean, heck, you could even argue Kansas, your preseason number one, never met potential. There's a lot of college basketball teams that just never met that potential this year.
I mean, fair point. It's a fair point. But I can only make an argument for K-State.
Sure.
I mean, everybody has their own stories. But it just, you're chasing being healthy and being at full strength all year long when it was just never going to be there.
Right.
It was just never in the cards. I don't want that to be the excuse. I thought this team was still talented enough to be an NCAA tournament team and be safely in the field, but just didn't get enough results. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. You can argue the resume, but there's also a lot of wins they left out there.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. They were playing a lot of like do or die basketball all the time. And reminds me a lot of like the Bills at the end of the NFL regular season. Like they were in playoff mode in like week 14. Like they were win or go home with 4 weeks left in the regular season. And it kind of felt like K-State was doing that for about 2 months. And I think if you could do it at the right time, it kind of battle tests you and gets you ready for that NCAA tournament. But if you're playing do or die basketball for 2 months straight, trying to just survive and get to that point where you're looking at an NCAA tournament bid, it wears you out, you know. And I think that's kind of where we got, where at the beginning of the year, we're going to OT, a lot of close games, but they're pulling these games out. Even with the high turnover numbers, they're finding ways to win. And eventually, after time, you can't find a way to win because, again, you're fighting the injury bugs, you're fighting the health and all these things. And I think it finally caught up to them. But I do agree with you. The resume speaks for itself. The record doesn't look great, but you shouldn't get held out of a tournament because your strength of schedule was too good because you played in the best conference in college basketball.
All right, we got to take a break. I'm just saying, like, I mean, going to overtime with Oral Roberts in North Alabama is not a good look.
Yeah.
It just isn't. All right, we could go on and on about this. We need to take a break when we come back. Blindly Ranked 5 with David G after these words. Welcome back to the game on News Radio KMAN. It is Blindly Ranked 5 time. Before we get there, a reminder, K-State baseball in action as they open up a three-game series today against Missouri State at Toyton Family Stadium. First pitch today at 6:05. Pre-game coverage 5:30 right here on News Radio KMAN. So that means we are out at 5:30 with the show. But it is Friday. You know what that means. It's time to play Blindly Ranked 5 with David G.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's how this works. We're ranking five things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give DG the theme, the category. And he's going to rank these things one at a time, but he doesn't know what comes next. So he's got to anticipate as he ranks these things one through five. So, DG, if you're ready to go, this took place a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We actually never really even talked about it after the fact. After it all took place, but Sting's final match, the pro wrestler Sting, had his final match a couple of weekends ago, and I thought it went down perfect. Mm. His sons were involved, went out a winner, which typically the history, the unwritten rule of pro wrestling is that if it's your final match, you lose.
I didn't know that.
You give back to the business.
Whoa.
But I think the true legend should go out a winner.
Yeah.
Like they have been for a very long time, and that's what Sting did. He retired as a tag team champion.
Yeah.
So the theme this week is athletes' final matches or final games.
Ooh, this is a good one. This is a good one. All right.
We're going to lead off with a heavy hitter. Number one on the list, you rank it wherever you want, Kobe Bryant's last game, April 13th of 2016, when he scored 60 in a win over the Utah Jazz in a regular season game. He took 50 shots in the game and scored 60 points. So, I mean, if you do the math, it's not exactly the most efficient day, but he still scored 60.
Yeah, and they were bad that year, if I remember right.
Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, they're really bad. I've always been an MJ guy. I'm going number four. I'm putting Kobe's 60 at number number four.
Interesting. Okay, Kobe Bryant at number four on our list of athletes' final games. Mm-hmm. Memorable or historic, however you want to put it, final games for an athlete.
Now, if we're talking 81, the 81 game, that's one of the most memorable times as a sports fan.
But it wasn't his last game.
It wasn't.
All right, next on the list... Wanted to throw a little bit of soccer in here because soccer is always kind of interesting on what you would consider their last match. One of the most famous last matches will go to Mia Hamm. Mia Hamm is somebody everybody has heard of. She is a historic women's soccer player in United States history. She'll go down, of course, all time as one of the greats, not only just in America, but an international player. She scored 158 goals internationally. Her last game was in the 2004 Olympics, and the U.S. won a gold medal in Athens, Greece, in overtime over Brazil. Didn't score, but won a gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
That was her last competitive, like real competitive results matter game. Her last match was actually a friendly, which she did score in. But I'm going to go with the gold medal match, the last competitive match in her career.
Number five.
Couldn't get you with that one?
No.
A gold medal doesn't do anything for you?
No.
In the Olympics?
No, not a soccer. You know,
so
like,
you're biased against soccer?
Yeah. Well,
you just don't like soccer?
Not the Olympic soccer. Because the World Cup is already the Olympic soccer. I don't know why they did that.
But nobody ever has their last match in the World Cup.
They never do that. They don't. They never do that.
They go at, typically, soccer players will always go out in a friendly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why that is. But, yeah, you know, whatever.
That is interesting, but sorry, Mia.
All right, let's go all the way back to 1960.
Ooh.
Your next athlete is you have Kobe Bryant 4, Mia Hamm 5 on athletes' famous final games. Ted Williams played 19 seasons with the Boston Red Sox. He had the 4-year break there for the war, right? He was in World War II or something like that.
Yeah.
Ted Williams played 19 years with the Red Sox. His final game was a regular season win over the Baltimore Orioles in September of 1960. In his final at-bat, he hit a home run.
Yeah. We'll put...
Famous speech afterwards.
The Splendid Splinter 2. I'm going Teddy Williams 2.
All right, so you put Kobe Bryant 4, Mia Hamm 5, Ted Williams at number 2. And again, this is athletes famous... final games.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Athlete number 4 is Lennox Lewis.
Oh,
do you
yeah.
remember his last fight?
Yeah, he fought a Vitaly Klitschko, and it was a huge fight, and it was a really crazy fight, too. He busted him up, but Vitaly Klitschko was, like, really giving him a hard time. It was tough. It was a tough fight.
So if you don't remember the actual results, so Lennox Lewis won in six rounds by TKO.
Yeah.
So you were spot on with that. What's also notable about this is Lennox Lewis, most boxers don't get to do this, but he went out on his own terms. He was still the WBC, the IBO champion in 2003. Vitaly Klitschko, though, by the way, at the time was the number one ranked heavyweight
mm-hmm.
in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Vitaly and Vladimir, I mean, they're famous brothers when it comes to heavyweight boxers, but... Lennox Lewis in his last fight, representing, of course, the UK, won the matchup and became a broadcaster after that.
Yeah, then he retired because they were going to rematch. But I don't think he wanted anything to do with him, Vitaly Klitschko. I don't think he wanted anything to do with that guy. I don't blame him. He was like 40 years old almost. He had done everything. He had fought everybody. He never, ever ducked a single boxer. Lennox Lewis is up there with Larry Holmes as far as... underrated lineal heavyweight champions. If you can be underrated, more like underappreciated. He's someone that's just people have disregarded, but I think in 30 years, we're going to look at his records and go, wow, he was really good.
Why do you think he was considered underrated? Do you think maybe it was just the timing?
So like, he didn't – he really – as far as his peers go, he had a diminished Mike Tyson. He had a diminished Evander Holyfield. Riddick Bowe was diminished as well. I don't think he had a true rival.
That's the thing, because wasn't his like heyday, wasn't that when the heavyweight division of boxing, like the absolute greats were kind of fading away he was left standing?
It was post-Tyson jail sentence. Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe had beaten the heck out of each other. He was also a guy who just kind of jabbed you, boom, 1-2 combination. It was boring. It wasn't like flashy. It wasn't cool. He would just go out there and beat the heck out of people for 12 rounds. So, yeah, he was boring. I'm going to put that at number 3, but that's I will never forget that. Lennox Lewis.
Lennox Lewis finished his career. He fought 44 professional fights, 41 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw, 32 knockouts.
Yeah, then the 2 losses were freak knockouts. In fact, one of them, he had been filming Ocean's 11. He had been filming a scene for Ocean's 11 during training camp and then went in and was like, oh, this guy's not so good. And Haseem Rockman knocked him out cold. It was awesome.
By the way, Lennox Lewis also won a gold medal in the Olympics.
He did.
So he's also gold medalist.
He did.
All right, your final famous final game for an athlete. You have this, the number one spot left with Ted Williams at 2, Lennox Lewis 3, Kobe Bryant 4, and Mia Hamm 5. The last I put on the list is Ray Lewis.
Ooh.
Baltimore Ravens. He went out as a Super Bowl champion in 2013, beating the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
In the Harbaugh Super Bowl.
The Harbaugh Bowl.
34-31, the final. Ray Lewis, what was notable about his game in that Super Bowl, he had 2 tackles on the 49ers' final drive, including a part of the goal line stand.
Yes. That is worthy of a number one, going out as a Super Bowl champion. I don't think it gets much better than that.
So we had 2 Lewises back-to-back there at the end, but Deej, you finish out with Mia Hamm at 5, Kobe Bryant 4, Lennox Lewis 3, Ted Williams 2, and Ray Lewis 1. How do you feel about your list?
I probably, you know, looking back, I guess Kobe should be higher. But I wanted to leave room. I knew you were going to come with a heat, so I had to leave that at 4. But we should probably flip-flop Teddy Williams, Lennox Lewis, Kobe Bryant. Should just flip them all. And it should be maybe Teddy Williams at 3 or 4. But yeah, I'm happy with my list. I'm happy.
Well, I think we're going to do another Blindly Ranked 5 next week because we're most likely not going to have shows on Thursday and Friday because we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the NCAA tournament. But I really want to do an NCAA tournament-themed Blindly Ranked 5. So I'm going to think about that. We'll come back with that next week. When it comes to hour one of the game, that'll continue next.
One thing about the time change, we don't get to use Mitch's stock phrase of the game after dark.
Yeah, I know. You can't use it anymore.
No.
Got to wait till the wintertime.
Just means that the morning show before light is still a thing.
That's true. Yeah. Morning show's always in the dark.
Yeah. Well, okay. I guess that's the way to look at it. Yeah. In the dark, literally, not figuratively. Thank you. Okay? Yeah. let's just get that clarified quick. Something, something, morning show host, something.
There you go.
Yeah. I'd hate to get that guy mad at me.
Yeah, it's definitely not
it's happened a few times, you know.
Not the guy you want to frustrate.
No, not the guy you want to upset. Oh, wait. Hi, folks. And if you don't know, I am that guy. Mitch is out. He's headed over to the stadium for baseball. The Cats getting ready to match up with Missouri State. 1-3 this weekend gets underway just after 6 o'clock. Pregame coming up at 5:30 here on News Radio KMAN. But as we go into the weekend, conference tournaments wrap up. Sunday is Selection Sunday, both on the men's and women's side. The men's selection show comes up at 5 o'clock on Sunday evening. It's brought to you, by the way, here on radio by Booth Creek Wagyu. That's going to be a interesting show for the 3 hours, and it will touch on some of the women's bracketing as well. It's a 3 hour show, so there's plenty of time in there that they'll set the stage. While the K-State men are waiting to find out if enough dominoes fall that they're able to make the field of 68, we know that the K-State women are in. It's a question of where. Do they get the opportunity to host the first two rounds, or are they going to be sent out somewhere else? Mitch had the opportunity to chat about that a little earlier today.
Charlie Kream, ESPN.com women's basketball bracketologist, joins us here on The Game. Charlie, just leading off, want to get your thoughts just on the season as a whole. I testified earlier this week that I felt like women's college basketball this year has been better than the men's. It's had a little bit of everything. You have a lot of storylines heading into March Madness. What's been your take on this season? Has it been a lot of fun to cover?
Oh, it's been a blast, and I would completely agree. Just the fact that women's college basketball has Caitlin Clark and the men's side of things does not have anybody close to Caitlin Clark. I heard someone say try to make the equivalent that Zach Edey was the equivalent of Caitlin Clark in terms of attention and impact, and I vehemently disagree with that. Caitlin Clark is the biggest name in college basketball. Just that alone has been a super fun ride to follow. Seeing her break the record, most importantly, seeing the excitement around Iowa basketball, the fact that she's selling out road games with her team and setting ratings records on television, they've just been amazing. But then you've got the South Carolina story. You've got some teams that have kind of risen from places we didn't expect them to be, Oregon State being one, Kansas State being one. And so that's always fun, too, when you see – some balance along the sport as well. I mean, South Carolina has sort of tipped it in their scales considerably, but that's a fantastic story to follow too. And last year they were undefeated going into the NCAA tournament, seemed unbeatable, and then they got beat, which put a lot more focus on the game as well. So this has just been fantastic. It's dovetailed off of last year, and I can't imagine it being more fun, but it's been a blast all year.
Well, Charlie, I think it's fair to say around here the excitement for K-State women's basketball this year has been through the roof. I mean, compared to recent years, ticket sales are way high now, and I mean, I think it's an excitement level we haven't reached in probably 20 years. Love to get your thoughts on this year's K-State team, especially compared to expectations, and what do you thought about K-State heading into the season?
Early in the season, I had them kind of hovering around my top 25. So I think at one point I put them at maybe 24, and then a few weeks later with some other things that went on, I think maybe they fell out of the top 25 and we were like 26 or 27 overall. So they were right there. So there were some expectations, assuming that Ayoka Lee was going to be healthy, and she was hurt a little bit this season, but for the most part, you know, she's been available unlike last year when she didn't get to play at all. So just from that standpoint alone, K-State exceeded expectations because, you know, as you mentioned, they're right there, kind of borderline top 16 or not. But that's certainly an elevation from what I think I thought, certainly, and what most people thought they would end up with at the end of the year. So I hope everybody there has enjoyed this run because it's been a fun season, a fantastic season, and one that maybe some of the most ardent fans did expect. But I think a lot of us nationally didn't quite think it was going to be this good. We thought it would be pretty good, but maybe not quite this good.
You know, looking at your bracketology, right now you do have K-State as a five heading to Spokane, Washington. That would be a Gonzaga host. Your other fives are Oklahoma, Utah, Syracuse. The four is Gonzaga, Colorado, Virginia Tech, and Indiana. And I know when Gonzaga lost their West Coast Conference Championship game to Portland, I felt like that did shake some things up a little bit, but everybody had their own opinion about that. Right now, you do have K-State as a five. Is there something particular with K-State or something else, maybe with the team that's right now a four like a Gonzaga, that is the difference right now that's keeping K-State out of a four spot?
Yeah, I think if K-State had gotten to the Big 12 championship game, we might be talking about something very different here. Gonzaga was all the way up to 13 or 14 overall prior to that loss. So that to tumble all the way out of the top 16 would have been a significant fall for one game in a season that has been otherwise dominant. And one of the kind of the difference makers there is that Gonzaga has a win over over Stanford, and they also beat Alabama. Now, K-State has better wins than Alabama, but K-State doesn't have a win quite as good as beating Stanford. Now, there is a little asterisk to that I do want to mention if anybody missed that. Gonzaga beat Stanford. Cameron Brink missed most of that game, or a big chunk of that game, with an illness. So there is a little bit of a something to consider that's not just straightforward. But Gonzaga's the dominance that they had throughout the West Coast Conference season, they went out and scheduled very, very well in the non-conference and performed well against it. And the committee likes that. They really like teams that go out and schedule and then get a couple of wins within a good schedule or certainly really compete. And I'm not saying that Kansas State hasn't done elements of that for sure, but I think that the committee is going to still look favorably on Gonzaga's attempts to schedule in the non-conference. That seems to be one consistent thing that we hear year in and year out, no matter who changes on the committee, is that they want to see teams go out and challenge themselves when they have control over the schedule. I think that's going to bode well for maybe giving Gonzaga an edge over a few of those other teams right on the borderline of the top 16.
But would it shock you at all if K-State did end up with a 4 seed?
I don't know if it would shock me. It would surprise me because I also feel like Oklahoma is ahead of them as well. Having won the conference, that's something that is a differentiator. Now, Oklahoma is not going to be able to host, but it doesn't mean that they wouldn't be in the top 16 ahead of K-State. And then what happens, and Norman, the Big 12 gymnastics championships are going on in that arena that same weekend. So Oklahoma is not going to be able to host. However, like I said, they could still be in the top 16. And then whoever Oklahoma gets placed with as a 4 seed, the 5 seed would have the option of hosting. So it doesn't preclude Oklahoma from being put in the top 16. I think they would go in before Kansas State with that championship as, again, you're looking for very, very small margins of differences. And having a regular season conference championship is certainly one that does stand out.
Charlie Cream, our guest, he is ESPN.com's women's basketball bracketologist. It's interesting that, you know, women's basketball kind of has two bubbles, right? You have the 4 or 5 bubble, like who's going to be able to host, who's not going to host, and then the bubble, of course, just getting into the tournament. When it comes to your audience, where is the most interest to see who's going to be a 4 seed or who's going to actually get into the tournament with that bubble?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I haven't really taken the temperature on that too much, but I think from a national standpoint, the interest is far greater about the top 16. Depends on league to league and year to year. So, for instance, this year, the Big 12 fan base cares far more about the top 16 and that bubble, so to speak. Which is, by the way, you make a great point, and it's very cool that the women. I know some people are against having games on home courts, but this little added nugget of interest, a differentiator from the men's tournament, it adds another layer of discussion, right? Which we're talking about it right now. So I think that's actually fabulous for the women's game. And it does ensure better crowds typically. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the road team can't win. They have. Stanford lost at home last year as a 2 seed to a 7. So it can happen. But I think if you're an SEC fan this year, your concern is far greater about the bubble. And I've gotten inquiries from SEC media and fans about, is my team going to make it in the tournament at all? Whereas the inquiries from ACC fans and Big 12 fans and media is, are we going to be able to host? Or even Pac-12? Are we going to get 4 teams to host? Are we going to have 5 teams to host? A few weeks ago, could we get 6 teams to host? It does vary from whatever the agenda is for that particular league in a particular season. I'm not sure if there's one that overwhelms the other on a grand kind of 50,000 foot view, but they're both definitely talked about each and every year. It just alters this to who I'm having the conversation with.
Charlie, got a couple more questions for you. Just looking at the teams in the Big 12, I think it's quite clear. If you look at your bracketology, makes it very clear. The standings make it look very clear. There are 7 teams that are going to get in. The conference was evenly split down the middle of who's tournament teams, who's getting in, and who are just not tournament teams. So, I mean, outside of Texas, I think you could really call anybody maybe a dark horse favorite to make a run in the Big 12. But do you have a favorite right now that's not Texas that you could see, depending, of course, on matchups, that could make a tournament run this year?
I was having a conversation earlier. That very question was brought up. And the person I was talking to mentioned West Virginia. And I mentioned Oklahoma. I think you're right. I think all of them, in terms of making an Elite Eight or Final Four, would certainly be considered dark horses outside of Texas. And I pigeonholed Oklahoma as my team just because if the real good Oklahoma can be real, really good when they're making shots, they're playing with pace, getting out in the open floor, not relying so much on stuff that's going on in the paint and having to try to rebound with maybe a bigger team. But they can really shoot it, and they run a great offense, and that's certainly good enough to win a couple of games in the tournament, certainly good enough to beat a higher-seeded team. So that the Oklahoma, I guess, out of the Big 12 teams, would be my first choice, but K-State would fall into that category for a different reason. They have a star that they can rely on, that they can go to. We've seen Lee dominate games. When you're playing against, especially that second game, when you're playing against somebody, it's a short window of time to prepare, and she's a little bit of a unique player with her size and her ability to get that post position and then be so effective scoring, so efficient with her scoring, that she might be hard to prepare for depending on the matchup, depending on who the next team is. If it's a smaller team, they're not going to have anybody. They can just keep throwing her the ball, and she can keep scoring, and she can run up a huge total, and she can take the other team's ability to kind of get up and down the floor completely away because everything's kind of centered on her on the low block. So Kansas State would certainly fall in that category too, just for a very, almost the opposite reason of Oklahoma. And what this tournament always comes down to is matchups. So I would be curious as a K-State fan to look at who is that, obviously who the first game is, but really who's that second game? Because if they get a 5 seed, they'll be playing a 12. And the 12s are decent teams and certainly teams that could be a threat, but you'd expect the K-State would be able to prevail in that kind of situation. And they're definitely not going to see a team with size on the 12 line. But who's that team that might be the 4 seed that they would play in the second round? What kind of size do they have? What's their style of play? Are the K-State guards going to be able to run with the guards of that team and create the kind of pace and, you know, sort of state of the game that K-State wants? Those are important things to watch on Selection Sunday. Right away, you want to go, who are those teams in that small little quad, whether it be in Manhattan or in Boulder or in Spokane, who are those teams and do we match up well with them? Does our style work well against that team?
All right, Charlie, one more, and I'm sure this is a question you've been getting a lot, especially this month, because this is your month, it's March. South Carolina or the field?
Well, I have gotten that question a lot. Yeah. You're right. 2 weeks ago, I said, and this is not, it's usually like me to take the odds, right? The field has a lot more teams clearly available than the one South Carolina. So normally I would take the field. But a couple of weeks ago, I did say South Carolina because I felt like I couldn't find the weakness in this team. They didn't shoot it very well last year. Well, this year they shoot it really well. They still have tremendous size. They still have tremendous length and athleticism. They out-rebound their opponents. The one thing they were lacking last year, they corrected with the perimeter shooting. Last year's team at least had that little piece that you could point to and say, well, I might be vulnerable there. This team didn't seem to. But then they played in the SEC tournament, and I saw what another team of length like Tennessee could do, and then they played LSU in the finals, and that was a close game. And this team is young. This is a younger, for the most part, South Carolina team. And they don't have a ton of experience outside of a couple of players playing major minutes in NCAA tournament games. And I saw Tennessee be able to erase a 23-point lead against South Carolina. And really, Tennessee should have won that game. Camilla Cardoso's shot was, let's just call it what it was. It was lucky.
Yep.
She's never made a three in her collegiate life, and she made this one off the backboard from the top of the key. They should have lost that game. So they're certainly vulnerable. Again, it goes back to matchups. It's going to take maybe a certain type of team to do it. But at this point, I think I would have to go with the field because I saw enough vulnerability there. And I think it comes down to maybe killer instinct or experience. Something was missing that allowed Tennessee to erase 23 points against what is the best team in the country. So we do know that they can be got because Tennessee got them in the second half of that game. So I'm going to waffle, and I'm going to go with the field now.
Well, Charlie, thank you for your time. Thank you for your work. I appreciate the added fun to college basketball every year. Hopefully we'll be talking down the road soon.
Sounds great. A pleasure to be with you, Mitch.
You know, they mentioned the fact that you essentially have a grouping right now that would be K-State, Gonzaga, and Colorado. Okay, Colorado, we start talking Big 12 next year.
Yep.
Gonzaga, okay, I'm a little biased there because one of UNC's former assistants is the coach at Gonzaga. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Lisa's done a tremendous job with that program. She really has.
Yeah, 100%.
That said, You know her husband's an assistant coach to her?
I did not know
that. I mean, that's one of the neat little tricks on that one.
That is interesting.
Anyway, it's an interesting grouping to watch. And what we can tell you is that the women's tournament officially begins a week from, a week from today for the Field of 64. They will get started Wednesday, Thursday with their first four. And then it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the first weekend.
Still hoping for a home game.
That's all we can hope for. See if the Cats are able to draw that. And again, Selection Sunday in full, 5 o'clock, starts the coverage from Westwood One Sunday night, presented by Booth Creek Wagyu here on News Radio KMAN. We'll wrap it this week's edition of the game, this Friday edition, in a moment. Just a couple moments before we get you out to K-State baseball this evening. The Cats in action against Missouri State. First of three. Should be a good weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited. You know, network game tonight, so I don't get to sit here. But I'll be here all weekend.
There you go.
Doing some K-State baseball.
There you go.
Are you ready for some Ask Us Anything?
Yes, fire away.
All right, well, we're full swing in the NFL offseason. So I got some football questions here for you. So I want you to give me... Then you can, if you got a couple to come to your head, but who's the number one guy you can think of? And it could be a guy that's coming in, maybe coming to K-State or going into college, or maybe it's a team, a guy that got drafted maybe to the Broncos that you were just wrong about. You're like, this guy is going to be a stud, and he was just horrible. Maybe Paxton Lynch, if you're a Paxton Lynch guy coming out. Like, I can think of like Matt Elam when he got drafted from Florida to the Ravens. I was like, this is Ed Reed's heir apparent right here. We're set. And then he was just awful.
The thing is that having been around for so long, there are so many that I could list that are that way at any level.
What was the gut check, the first name that came to your head? You're like, boom, I thought this guy was it, and he just wasn't.
Shane Drohar comes to mind. Was a guy out of Texas who came to the Broncos as a second-round draft pick. Big dude.
Lineman. Okay.
Got himself in a fight with a tight end out of Missouri in his first training camp and never was right.
Wow.
Of course, it didn't help that he, got conked on the head in the middle of that fight by the helmet.
Ooh.
His own helmet.
Yeah, the old Mason Rudolph treatment.
The old, don't take it off, you dumb.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was a Dan Reeves training camp, too. So that went over really poorly. And I witnessed it. It was an adventure. Yeah. Have a great weekend, folks. K-State baseball next.